This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
That uncertainty, that instability, it has an immediate impact on obviously tourism and travel. So we have organisations, of course, that are involved in that. But I think what it will also do is mean that we have a lot of travellers who are now stuck in transit because, as we've learned, Dubai in particular is a major transport hub. And the only really way to get out of there is to buy a 10-hour drive across the desert.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast. I'm Nikki White, Senior News Editor at the KM Media Group. And this week we look at a crucial upcoming by-election, how a previous podcast guest has found himself in hot water, yet more homes planned for one part of Kent, and how the Middle East conflict is affecting our county. The by-election date has been announced for the seat on Kent County Council, and it's April the 9th. This is being seen as a major test for how Reform UK have performed at County Hall since they won a landslide victory last May. The division up for grabs this time is at Cliftonville near Margate, and the by-election was called after former Reform UK member Daniel Taylor was jailed for 12 months for coercive behaviour towards his wife. Taylor had been elected with 40% of the vote as part of the Reform victory last May, when it took 57 of the 81 seats at County Hall. Interestingly, the Green Party, Conservatives and Labour all feel they have a chance. The Greens believe they can turn the contest into a local rerun of the Gorton and Denton parliamentary by-election, which it won convincingly with Reform in second spot. The Conservatives, who had around 20%, think the Tory brand is improving and Reform may struggle to get its vote out in numbers. Some big names are rumoured to be visiting the campaign trail, which started with former Green Party leader Caroline Lucas expected to kick the campaign off. Three of the parties have announced their likely candidates for the election. The Conservatives have chosen Charlie Letts, a Thanet district councillor who represents the Beacon Road ward. The Greens candidate is Rob Yates, who is also a Thanet councillor for Margate Central. The Liberal Democrats, who are not expected to win, are fielding Dr. Mo Shafei. Reform UK and Labour have yet to make formal announcements about their candidate, and Labour was not contactable. The parties must submit nomination papers by 4pm on March the 11th, and it is understood that postal votes will go out a few days later. Most local political observers see Cliftonville as a Reform UK hold, but with the potential for an upset. Turnout could be a key factor, as is whether the hard right party Restore Britain will stand a candidate. If the party, led by former Reform UK MP Rupert Lowe, is not registered with the Electoral Commission to stand, it may back an independent candidate instead. The Conservatives are hoping Restore will stand, as it may potentially split the Reform vote. Labour feels it has a strong chance, having come second in 2025, and will point to an improving economy and Reform's record so far at County Hall. Reform, meanwhile, would be desperate not to lose it, especially after losing the parliamentary by-election. But this is slightly different because the elected incumbent was Reform UK at the time of the poll, and it is now theirs to lose. Last week on the podcast, we had a guest discussion about all things youth and politics with two of Kent's youngest councillors, Councillor Harry McKenzie from Canterbury and Councillor Kieran Mischuk of Swale. The younger of the two, 19-year-old Restore Britain member Kieran Mischuk, has found himself in hot water this week for his social media antics. He reposted a meme on X, which used the N-word not once but twice, and also referred to Nigel Farage and Donald Trump as being on the due right, compared to Rupert Lowe, the leader of his party. When asked about it, he apologised profusely. He stressed that the repost was an accident, saying he didn't read the racist post properly before sharing it, which he did so while tired, and strongly disavowed the language contained in it. Restore Britain did not respond to a request for a comment, but his fellow Swale councillor, the Lib Dem Hannah Perkin, has posted on Facebook saying that the young councillor Mischuk should publicly apologise in the chamber for the post. Meanwhile, over in Canterbury, the final draft of the City Council's plans for 23,000 homes has been released. The authority has been in the throes of the local plan process for quite some time now. In 2022, a very controversial local plan by the previous Tory administration included proposals for traffic zones, which would regulate how frequently residents could drive from one area of the city to another to control congestion. But in 2023, a new Labour-Lib Dem coalition took charge after the election and set about rewriting those plans. Now, almost 3 years later, they have released the very final draft of the plan, which allocates sites for more than 23,000 homes and infrastructure covering the period up to 2042. This final version doesn't contain any great surprises, with the council's commitments to expand the Wincheap Park and Ride, get an A2 bypass in the Wincheap area built, and the long-awaited Broad Oak Reservoir all featuring. The council debated the plans again this week, ahead of special cabinet and full council meetings on March the 18th, where the final vote will be taken on sending the plans off to a government inspector for approval. In Medway, there's been a raft of large-scale planning applications coming to key turning points this week, some expected and others less so. Two applications totalling 1,260 homes are recommended for approval at a Medway Council Planning Committee meeting on March the 11th. The first is for the former SGN Gasworks site in Gillingham near the Strand. The scheme would see 500 homes, a new supermarket, an SGN training centre, office and depot, and a block of 140 units for older people in what will either be assisted living or a care home. The application has only about £480,000 worth of developers' contributions, going towards things like the refurbishment of the Strand Lido, a new bus shelter, and improvements to nearby public spaces. The proposals from Blueberry Developments will also be conditional on them providing a new clubhouse for the Seagas Sailing Club, which is already on the site. The reason for the relatively low contributions, considering the scale of the development, is because it's anticipated there will be a considerable cost for bringing the brownfield site up to standard, and so more developer contributions, or requirements for affordable housing, would make the scheme completely unviable. However, the council has included a clause that there will be a re-evaluation when 90% of the homes have been sold, to see if profits from the development are much higher than expected. 50% of anything over what the estimates currently show will be taken by the council for infrastructure improvements in the area. The second application, also recommended for approval by officers, is for a total of 760 homes on the edge of High Houstow Village on the Hoo Peninsula. 270 of them are up for complete approval, with the details of layout included, while 490 are up for outline approval, meaning further detail would need to be agreed at a later date. For this development, the conditions total nearly £24 million for schools, health provision on the peninsula, improvements to roads and other local facilities. That's on top of 25% of the houses having to be affordable homes. However, two applications have also moved on this week, with the developers behind proposals totalling 690 homes making appeals to the planning inspectorate on the grounds of non-determination. Taylor Wimpey, which applied for 450 homes on land near Hoo St Werburgh in October 2024, and Gladman Developments, which proposed 240 homes on an adjacent site in August 2023, have both said Medway Council is taking far too long to decide, and so they want inspectors to make the decision instead. Documents show both applications were supposed to have been considered at a planning meeting next month, with the Gladman Development Scheme reportedly recommended for approval. But sceptics claim the reason for the push to get the planning inspector involved is so the plans are approved before the new local plan comes into effect, with all the obligations it would mean for the developers. And finally, Homes England has submitted an application for up to 450 homes on the former Chattenden Barracks site after originally submitting a scoping opinion in March last year. The government's housing agency says it's looking to create a sustainable development on the land, which is next to the Lodge Hill site of special scientific interest, where there is a population of nightingales. These birds have previously prevented other large-scale developments in the area, so we'll see if Homes England has similar problems or can overcome it.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
The political agenda has been dominated this week by the conflict in the Middle East. While many of us will have friends or loved ones who are out there who we're worried about, there are other aspects likely to affect us much closer to home. One leading expert says businesses in Kent will be impacted, with some economists reckoning Brent crude oil could rise to $100 a barrel. Judah Price, the chief executive of Kent Invicta Chamber of Commerce, spoke to us on Monday.
As ever, it's the uncertainty, and unfortunately Donald Trump likes to sort of prey on this uncertainty. It seems to be how he operates his foreign policy. But what that does for businesses, and you know, those specifically here in Kent as well, is it causes uncertainty around supply chain and around energy costs, because of course a lot of oil comes from the Middle East, as the gas as well. And so it's that uncertainty about future prices, and we've already seen the 10% increase when the markets opened this morning, and what that's going to do then to production, manufacturing, component parts and stuff like that. So it causes uncertainty, which means businesses tend not to want to invest. They hold tight to their cash until they know what the future looks like.
And for the retaliatory strikes to target the UAE, probably a country that we wouldn't expect them to target, because it essentially it's seen as a very safe and neutral area as well. So I think that was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it?
Yes, I think that immediate retaliation to countries that weren't seemingly involved, but of course we've since learned that there are US air bases and military bases up and down the Gulf there, and so they're obviously being targeted. That uncertainty, that instability, it has an immediate impact on obviously tourism and travel. So we already have organisations, of course, that are involved in that. But I think what it will also do is mean that we have a lot of travellers who are now stuck in transit, because as we've learned, Dubai in particular is a major transport hub. And the only really way to get out of there is to buy a 10-hour drive across the desert.
Yeah, not an ideal time for an awful lot of people. If we go back to when the conflict in Ukraine started, just from my personal experience, I'd ordered a car and I didn't realise quite how much of my car was actually made in Ukraine. And there was a huge disruption to the whole supply network. Could we face similar things this time around with products that are due to be imported into this country? Could we see supply chains being disrupted because of what's happened?
Sadly, yes. I mean, I don't want to get too negative at this early stage, but because you know the conflict may come to an end just as quickly as it started. So we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But I mean, the fact that we've seen an increase in oil prices straight away is an indicator that there are other potential problems to be had coming down the line. The amount of traffic, freight traffic that travels up and down the Gulf there, that there'll be countries now which will be worrying about how they can move their goods from their ports across to the UK and the EU. So yeah, that supply chain will suddenly start to sort of get log jammed and get compressed, because just on a pure basis, the ships have to go the long way around. And that suddenly adds another week to the journey. And of course, that has a knock-on effect for assembly lines and production lines. So unfortunately, yes, there is a serious risk to this type of foreign policy intervention.
And presumably that in turn pushes up prices as well.
It does, sadly. Yes, those come with costs. And of course, you know, it's really frustrating right now. The UK economy is recovering, okay, slowly, but it is definitely recovering. We're seeing some positive signs from the businesses we're talking to here in Kent. So this is a really unfortunate and badly timed intervention.
The government has launched its consultation on making the online world safer for children. It's an issue Ashford MP Sojan Joseph has campaigned on since he was elected and says it's key to improving young people's mental health and well-being. Before becoming an MP, he spent 22 years working in NHS mental health services and says he saw increased rates of anxiety, depression and self-harm, and he believes that many of these cases were linked to overexposure to social media from a very young age. He's been telling us why this consultation is needed.
We have seen a significant increase of mental health issues among young people in the last decade or so. So we cannot just say this is purely because of increased social media screen time use, but definitely social media and screen time, increased screen time has an impact on this. A couple of things we have seen, lack of confidence in people, lack of patience, anxiety, depression. This is all on top of the disinformation and misinformation that's coming through social media. And also, we have had evidences of children committing or acting self-harming or suicide, influenced by people on social media. So there is evidence that this has an impact on the people. And also we know that the more time you spend on screen, it takes away that natural conversation, social interaction. People feel isolated, lonely. They spend hours and hours in their bedrooms, not having that natural interaction. So it has an impact on people's mental health.
I'm not sure if you've probably seen it. There's a thing going around on social media at the moment. It's these school wars, and I think it was on TikTok. So children are sort of assigned a color, they're assigned a side, and they're expected to, you know, basically go to war with each other. You know, they get certain points for, you know, if they beat somebody up or if they film an attack or things like that. I mean, surely things like this aren't helping children's mental health. I mean, have you? Is that something that you've seen?
I'm not aware of any specific cases, but I have seen similar kind of videos spreading in the social media. And again, as I touched on earlier, we don't know how many of those videos spreading in TikTok and other social media are correct. How many are related to from this country? This is the danger. This is the danger side. What we're talking about is why it is important to bring those restrictions that I touched on disinformation and misinformation. So especially with the AI coming in, anybody can create any sort of video which looks natural. And what we have seen people going on to AI chatbots to get advice, especially on get advice on mental health, things like that. So this is why it is making important that we don't know what we actually seeing on social media these days. So that's why this restriction is very important. And we also make sure that, yes, Australia gone ahead and put restriction on under 16. So we should look for evidence as how successful it is. What is the outcome that's coming from Australia as well before we make any sort of decision in this country? That's why this consultation is very important.
Okay, that's it for this week. Don't forget you can keep up to date with politics in Kent at Kent Online, and you can also sign up to our politics and briefing newsletter at kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't miss KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.